Hallmark Movies and Mysteries presents. Title: Gourmet Detective, Eat, Drink, and Be Buried. Nighttime. The silhouette of a human passes in front of a dark house. The figure holds a flashlight as they enter the house and punch into a keypad beside the door. Text: Dylan Neal, Brooke Burns, Matthew Kevin Anderson, Mark Sr., Samantha Ferris. Now, the figure walks further into the house. Christine Willis, Ali Scopey, David Pithgau, Brittany Wilson. They punch buttons on another keypad and enter through a gate. Gary Chalk, Vanessa Walsh, Chris McNally, Toby Levins, and Bruce Boxleitner. The figure opens a case from a shelf and opens it. Inside are two antique pistols with metal attachments and accessories. The figure, wearing leather gloves, selects one of the pistols and pours from a bottle into the barrel. The hand places a small round bullet into the barrel and hammers it in with a mallet, then replaces the pistol in the case. The figure closes the lid and places the case back in the shelf. The figure now retraces their steps out of the house. Daytime. We fly over the Golden Gate Bridge. A Jeep pulls up to a suburban house. A man gets out, wearing a costume of pantaloons and hose, speaking on his cell phone.
I'm just getting out of the car. Are you still there? Yeah, I'm here. Good. Listen, could you tell the people in Zurich that I'm still interested in attending their event? Okay, thanks, Lucy. I think that is it. I'm just at Maggie's now, picking her up for the party.
A teenage girl opens the door.
Hi.
Hey, Abby.
Nice tights.
Technically, these are not tights. They are stockings, also known as splatterdashes.
Good to know.
In another room, an older woman is placing a costume choker on a young woman wearing a corset.
Henry definitely keeps things interesting, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I never thought we'd be celebrating our 3-month anniversary dressed like this.
Oh, has it been 3 months already?
Mm-hmm.
What are you getting him?
You know, adults don't celebrate their 3-month dating anniversaries, but speaking of celebrations,
his birthday's in 2 weeks and he refuses to even talk about it.
Well, maybe he just doesn't like birthdays.
It's not just that.
The thing is, even though we spend all this time together, he never opens up to me about anything personal. You know? I mean, I know next to nothing about his childhood, and anytime I try to ask, he just clams right up.
Maybe he feels like you're prying.
But I don't pry.
Sometimes you pry.
You got another thing.
Nope.
Oh, man, I am so bad at this.
You really are.
Henry and Abby on the couch, playing a video game. Henry looks up and freezes as Maggie enters in her lacy blue dress and necklace.
You look stunning.
Henry kisses her hand.
Oh, well, thank you, kind sir. You look pretty good yourself.
Hmm.
Nice tights.
Technically, they're splatterdashes.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know.
Well, your carriage awaits, my lady.
Thank you.
He extends an elbow. Now, Henry's Jeep pulls up to the large house from earlier.
No, sir, I got that. Thank you.
Henry passes the valet to open Maggie's door.
Thank you.
Maggie gets out.
Oh, wow. Beautiful place.
They approach the door.
Henry, why is nobody else in costume? You said this is a costume party, right?
In the rotunda, guests mingle in suits and modern dresses.
I'm gonna kill you.
An older man approaches.
Henry, there you are.
David, happy birthday. This is Maggie.
Maggie? Hello.
Hi. Obviously, there's been a little miscommunication.
Yeah. I take it you didn't get the notification 2 weeks ago.
Apparently not.
Apparently not.
Oh, no, Henry. I am so sorry.
Because you consulted on the menu, you ended up on the staff list instead of the guest list, and I didn't send you the updated invitation. But you look fabulous, both of you. Hi, I'm Felicity Weston, David's daughter.
Nice to meet you, Maggie Price. I'm just gonna...
Nonsense, you're not going anywhere. You look beautiful. You're exactly what this evening is all about. Now, I have a very special bottle of Bordeaux, and I'm gonna open it just for you.
Oh.
Would you care for a glass?
I'd like the bottle, please. Thank you.
All right.
I'll be back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good thing we didn't wear the wigs.
Maggie scowls at Henry.
Listen,
As much as I hate to abandon you, especially now, considering everything, I really do need to go and check on how everything's going in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please go.
Are you sure?
Yes. Go.
As you wish.
Henry steps away. Felicity returns with two glasses.
Here you go, my dad's favorite Montrose Bordeaux.
Thank you very much.
Maggie sips, checking her phone.
Delicious.
Yeah.
I was just checking on my daughter.
Well, how old is she?
15. I probably don't have to keep tabs on her as much as I do, but...
Completely understandable. I don't know how my parents did it with four teenagers under one roof.
Four? At once? Oh, wow. That's terrifying.
We're a blended family. Like the Brady Bunch, but without the singing. Or the getting along.
I see.
That good-looking guy over there flirting with half the room is my biological brother, Douglas. And that's my stepbrother, Ken.
Ken holds a sword.
My stepsister, Angela's probably off in a corner whining about something.
Oh, I take it you two don't get along.
After my parents got divorced, our dad married Ken and Angela's mom pretty quickly. A little too quickly for everyone's taste. Doug and I thought Ken and Angela were boring and provincial, and they thought we were troublemakers, which of course we were.
Henry stands in the kitchen.
No, I'm glad we went with these cherries. I think these look good. Oh, don't overglaze the pheasant, please, and I think you're very fine. Thank you, team. Everything's looking great. Thank you.
Nearby, a young woman and man.
Angela, how are you?
Hi, Henry. How's everything going in the kitchen?
Oh, minor crisis averted, but I think everything is perfect now. Your father is going to have a menu that is 100% authentic to the late 1700s.
Well, it doesn't get much more authentic than that outfit.
Yeah, long story.
Henry, this is my husband, Colin.
Oh, nice to meet you.
And you. My father-in-law's told me all about you. I don't know if you've heard of my company, Watershed. We do sports bars, protein powders. We got a line of frozen foods
of
coming
course, out. Of course. I see your products everywhere. You're obviously doing very well.
Wonderful. Well, you look great.
Thank you.
Did I mention that?
Hi. I'm Ken. I don't believe we've met.
Ken, this is Maggie. Maggie, my stepbrother, Ken.
Henry's Maggie.
Ah, indeed.
We've heard a lot about you. It's nice to finally meet.
Oh, no. That's right.
Mrs. Hayworth is complaining about where she's seated at dinner tonight. Can you go talk to her?
Maggie, it was lovely chatting with you.
You too.
Felicity walks off.
So Henry says you're a detective. That must be exciting.
It has its moments.
Henry passes the back door.
Hi,
Douglas is now standing outside with a woman.
What are you talking about?
Pardon me. Can't do this anymore, okay, Doug?
Bess, please, don't go.
Let go of me.
I'm sorry. Please, can we talk about this?
Okay. Not now. Later.
The young woman walks back toward the back door, wincing as she rubs her own wrist. Maggie enters a side room. She notices several rifles laying on the table, and two large cases full of a sword and shield on either side of an antique piano. She pauses, examining the two antique pistols as David enters.
They're beautiful, aren't they?
I'm so sorry.
Oh, please. That's why they're out there on display. You know, I owe a lot to that pistol right there. My family wouldn't have the publishing business without it.
Oh, really? How's that?
Jack Weston, my great-great-great-great-grandfather, was an editor for the Philadelphia Delegate. Well, in one of his editorials, he poked fun at the owner of the newspaper, Sir William Grant. Well, Grant didn't like that and challenged him to a duel. Jack accepted on one condition.
That if he won, the delegate would become his?
That's right.
And lucky for you, Jack was a good shot.
No kidding. Shall we?
Indeed. Well, they're lovely.
David extends an arm, and they walk toward the rotunda. Maggie glances back at the pistols. Now, several caterers carry beverage urns and plates of food to the tables in the backyard. David examines a menu printed on parchment.
Oh my. Roast beef, mutton, pheasant. My doctor's gonna kill me when he sees what I'm doing to my cholesterol today.
Yes, an 18th century menu is quite heavy on the meat, but I've given you some healthy options there as
well. Yes, I can see that.
Why don't you stick with the stinging nettle soup and the salad?
On his birthday? Don't be ridiculous. Go ahead and indulge, Dad.
It's not a joke, Felicity. He needs to be careful.
Oh, lighten up.
Please. I will be careful. But can a man enjoy one meal on his birthday?
Felicity and Angela stare at each other.
Now, this looks delicious.
So, David, how's business?
Oh, well, you know, Henry, the way publishing has gone in the last 10 years, we've had to get a little creative.
We've moved a significant amount of our content online.
Problem with online content is getting people to pay for it.
Well, subscriptions are way up.
Define way up.
Oh, don't start, you too.
Really, Douglas, not today.
I was right.
You would say that.
I'm sorry, I...
No apologies necessary, Henry. You asked a simple question, which in an ideal world, my family and I would have answered without turning things into World War III.
We would never start World War III on your birthday, Dad.
We'd wait till tomorrow.
Now, a small combo of string musicians plays in the grass. Several couples dance together, swaying. Henry and Maggie dance together.
So, you know, your birthday's coming up in 2 weeks, and every time I try to bring it up, you keep changing the subject.
Well, I don't really celebrate birthdays.
Don't be silly. Who doesn't celebrate birthdays?
Me. Ever since I was a kid.
Okay. Why? What happened? Bad experience with a birthday clown?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that? He ate your cake, stole your presents.
Look, Maggie, I just don't really enjoy the whole,
Okay. So what if I throw you just the teeniest of parties and I promise no clowns?
Maggie, I just don't want you to make a fuss, okay? I really don't.
Henry, that's what people do when they're in a relationship. They make a fuss over the other person's birthday.
And I'm telling you, I don't need you to.
Wow, okay. I get it.
You get what?
If you don't want me to do anything for you, then I won't.
Maggie, I
just... Ladies and gentlemen, can I have your attention for a moment, please? We'd like to invite you all back inside where I have a little surprise set up for you. So join me in the rotunda in about 5 minutes. Thanks very much.
Maggie crosses her arms.
Maggie,
I'm gonna grab some water, okay?
Henry hangs his head. Then, in the rotunda.
Now, as some of you are already aware, the pistols used in the infamous duel that launched my family's publishing business have recently resurfaced. Now, as you also know, my two sons don't often see eye to eye, well, ever. But today, they have agreed to humor their old man on his birthday and reenact that famous duel for your entertainment.
Douglas and Ken enter in period costumes with three-cornered hats and waistcoats. They are followed by a drummer. They face each other in front of David.
Now, last week, a coin was tossed, and Ken here drew Sir William Grant, and Doug, Jack Weston. Now, I heard that Ken here has been practicing his death scene, and it's quite dramatic.
Ken removes his hat and bows deeply.
Your brother truly is a suck-up. Your brother's a narcissist.
Can't believe I agreed to do this.
Still, I play the loser.
That's funny, because I could have sworn that Dad just made me president of the company.
I wish we really could settle this the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, I bet you do.
All right, stop it. That's enough. Now, the rules of engagement for the duel were read aloud, at which point a drum roll commenced. Then, this would cue the men to walk 8 paces and turn. When the handkerchief was dropped to the floor, the men were free to fire. Gentlemen?
They nod at each other. The drummer begins playing. Ken and Douglas hold the pistols as they turn and walk away from each other. They stop and turn. They aim the pistols. A waitress drops a handkerchief. Ken clutches his chest and falls to the ground. Douglas grins.
Well done. Well done.
Now, the room turns to Ken, still laying on the floor.
Is that fake blood?
Ken. Ken?
Maggie stares, her smile fading. She dashes over to Ken and turns his body. She notices a blood stain.
He's been shot. Oh my God.
No. The guns, they weren't loaded.
Somebody call 911 right now.
Douglas capes. Maggie looks up at Henry, looking serious.
He's dead.
Now, an ambulance is parked outside the house. 2 men wheel a body on a stretcher toward the ambulance. Maggie and Henry approach an officer. Maggie now wears street clothes.
Nolan, thanks for bringing me a change of clothes. It's a little hard to run an investigation while dressed like Marie Antoinette. happy to oblige.
So explain this to me. Ken died too quickly for a gunshot wound. He had no pulse within seconds of being shot.
I'll have a preliminary report ready by tomorrow, but one possibility that I have seen before is hydrostatic shock.
What's that?
The short answer is that if you have the right bullet in the right place, complete organ failure can occur. Now, I won't know until I perform the autopsy, but I will keep an eye out for anything out of the ordinary.
That'd be great. Thank you.
You got it.
Nolan walks off.
So, what happens now?
Well, Douglas claims he didn't know it was loaded, which means all I've got so far is negligent discharge of a firearm. If I arrest him now, his lawyers will probably have him out by lunchtime tomorrow, and I'll have a much less cooperative family to deal with. Which, speaking of, I should probably go and talk to them. They've been separated, so they can't confer about what happened.
Confer? Maggie, what are you talking about? This was an accident.
That's what we're going to find out.
Inside, Maggie and Henry sit on a couch facing David.
I know that this is really difficult, and that you want to be with your family right now. But I need to establish who had access to these weapons leading up to the party.
David ponders, his arm on the armrest of a couch.
I keep them in my office with all my other antique weapons. The room is locked at all times and can only be opened with a keypad. 3 days ago, I cleaned them. And then I didn't return until today. And at 2 o'clock, I loaded the pistols with blanks for the party. Then I put them on display, and the room was unlocked for the rest of the day.
Who has the code to your office?
All my children do. Well, they need access to my financial paperwork in case something happens to me.
Dave wipes his eye.
I'm sorry.
Now, Maggie and Henry sit with Douglas.
I understand that you and Ken didn't get along.
Doug furrows his brow.
Well, what are you suggesting? You're not saying that I did this on purpose.
Doug was always jealous of my brother. He was so angry when Dad put Ken in charge instead of him.
Of course it made Doug angry. Dad chose Ken to take over the company when he retired over his own flesh and blood.
They've lost 47% of their stock over the past 5 years. And Ken just couldn't admit it.
So Ken disagreed about selling the company?
He did. He felt that our online sales and our subscriptions had finally turned the corner.
And with Ken gone, who's next in line to run the company?
In their separate interview rooms, Douglas and Felicity look up. Then, Angela looks up.
It's Doug.
Maggie stares at Angela, pondering. Daytime at Maggie's house. Abby types on her phone in the kitchen.
What time did you get in last night?
Oh, it was pretty late by the time I finished with all my paperwork. I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to go to the beach with you guys today. I really got to get a jump on this case.
Ab?
What?
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Who's that?
No one.
Okay. For a no one, he seems pretty funny.
As Maggie approaches, Abby looks up, then dashes away.
Why don't you invite him over? We can serve nobody nothing for dinner.
Sure.
Abby walks out.
I'm not trying to pry, I'm just interested.
Oh man. Why can't she go back to being 10?
She'll tell us when she's ready.
Remember when she used to come rushing through the door at the end of the school day? She was talking so fast she could barely get the words out.
Those were great days.
And she used to want to tell me everything, and now she's texting a boy and she won't even tell me who.
Let her stretch away from you a little bit. It doesn't just work for men, you know. It works on teenagers, too. At least it did for you.
What do you mean? I was a great teenager.
Doris cocks her head.
Mom? Mom!
Doris places her palms up and backs away. Now, an older man pulls up to a small house and parks. The man turns to the house and takes a breath. Inside, Henry slices strawberries on a cutting board. He tastes a slice, then nods. Now, he slices more fruit and slices garnish. English muffins pop out of a toaster. Henry fries slices of ham on a pan, then plates them on the muffins. He places a poached egg on the ham. He whisks hollandaise sauce in a pan and pours it over the eggs. He now carries the plate to the table and sprinkles some garnish on. He picks up a remote.
Door's open, Lucy!
Now, he walks over to the front door.
What are you doing? Why are you ringing the doorbell?
The older man now stands on the porch, his arms crossed.
Hello, Henry.
Hi, Dad. What are you doing here?
I'm in town on business. Thought I'd drop by to say hello.
Oh. Come on in.
Henry gestures. The man enters.
Hey, it's a bad time. No,
it's fine, Dad. I was just making a quick breakfast. Can I get you some coffee?
Only if you've already got some on.
Henry indicates a French press.
A quick breakfast, huh?
Henry turns to his plate.
Just eggs, Dad.
Hi, Henry. Sorry I'm late. I got your text. I can't believe what happened. Sorry, I didn't know you had company.
No, it's okay, Lucy. This is, my dad. Dad, this is Lucy, my assistant.
Your dad? It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Ross.
Please call me Jim. Look, you seem busy. I'm just going
to
go.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I do have to head down to the precinct today, though.
Why?
Didn't you know Henry's a detective now?
Consultant.
He's helped solve 3 murders.
You're kidding me.
Nope. Not kidding.
How about that? You followed in your old man's footsteps after all.
Lucy turns to Henry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I never tell you? My dad is a retired cop.
That's amazing. There's like a whole organic apple falling from a locavore tree thing happening here.
Huh?
Not really a foodie.
Not like the gourmet detective here.
Yeah, I did not give myself that name, and the detective is only because I thought...
I know. I read your blog.
You do?
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, thank you. I write it. Under Henry's supervision, of course. And today, I'm covering the food truck festival down at the Embarcadero. It's going to be delicious. Oh. Care to join me?
Oh, you know what? I'm sure my dad...
I'd love to.
Great!
At the station, Maggie pours coffee from a Mr. Coffee pot. Henry enters with a food box. Maggie glances up at him when he approaches, then stirs her coffee.
Morning.
Morning.
I got you your favorite.
Thank you. That was nice.
Ooh, are those cannolis from Portola? Yum.
Well, you know my motto, never show up to an investigation empty-handed. Listen, Captain, I don't mean to be presumptuous, but I've known the Weston family for years, and I think I could make a great asset to this.
Hold your breath, Henry. I don't know if you are the luckiest or the unluckiest guy in the world, but let's just say that from now on, you are officially a consultant to the SFPD Homicide Division.
Really?
Mm?
That's great. Now, when you say officially...
It's an unpaid position.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The chief takes a bite.
Mm. I should have hired you years ago. Mm.
Does this mean I get a badge?
Maggie places photos on a board.
Okay. David Weston has 4 children, 2 from one marriage and 2 from another. He and his first wife had Doug and Felicity. Shortly after they divorced, when the kids were teens, he married his second wife who had 2 children of her own, Ken and Angela, also teens at the time. About 3 years later, his second wife died of cancer. David decided to adopt his stepchildren. And over time, Ken became his favorite, and eventually his right-hand man, a role that Doug felt should have been his.
So, not only did Douglas pull the trigger, but with Ken dead, he's next in line to run the company.
Which is why we're starting with him as our number one suspect.
What about David? He loaded the guns.
No, I've known David for years. He's no killer. Plus, he's not going to murder his own stepson.
And as far as we know now, he has no motive. Right? Financially, he has nothing to gain from Ken dying. But Doug does.
Doug pulled the trigger in a room full of witnesses. Why would anyone do that knowing they were going to be the number one suspect?
Someone could have set him up. If the intent was to kill Ken, then mission accomplished.
Either way, how would the killer know which gun to load?
Okay, so Jack Weston had his pistol engraved with his initials after he won the duel back in the 1700s. David said that they'd already decided that Doug would be the one to play the role of Jack for the reenactment.
So how many people knew Doug was playing Jack?
The decision was made about a week before with the coin toss. And I'm assuming that the whole family knew, possibly others as well.
But we still don't know how a bullet ended up in that pistol.
Yeah. Maybe someone loaded the gun right before the party while they were still on display.
Okay, the thing is, David took the pistol out of the cabinet, loaded it with blanks, and put it on display by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. By then, the house was already filled with staff preparing for the party. The guests were meant to be arriving around 4. I just don't see someone risking getting caught with all those people around, right? I mean, to me, I think it would be more likely that the pistol was loaded earlier before David went in. Then there's the codes to deal with, right? So there's the code to the house alarm and the code to the office. David says that all of his children have both codes.
I'll check with the security company, see what they can tell us about all activity in the days leading up to the party.
That'd be great, thank you. Monroe, why don't you start running background checks on everyone at the party? Bailey, see if you can find me an expert that's familiar with weapons from that time period. I want to find out everything that I can about blanks and musket balls for those pistols. I mean, somehow a blank was loaded at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but a real bullet was fired from the same gun at 7 o'clock. And I need to know how.
You are, boss.
As the staff walks out, Henry approaches Maggie.
So, what are we gonna do?
What we always do.
Maggie brushes past him.
Back to the scene of the crime.
Henry looks up at the board. Maggie and Henry pull up to the Weston house in her car. Douglas and Angela step outside to greet them.
Hi, thanks for meeting us here.
Of course. Anything you need.
They enter the rotunda. Douglas walks over to the keypad and types in a code. Maggie and Henry stay a step behind as Angela and Douglas enter the weapons room.
Remember not to touch anything.
I don't have gloves. Do you have an extra pair? Okay. Oh, can I keep these?
Henry steps inside, putting on the rubber gloves.
Well, this really is quite the collection, isn't it?
Dad's been building it for years.
Do any of the house staff know the code for this room?
I doubt it. Dad's really touchy about his office. He's the only one who comes in here.
And, when was this photo taken?
2 years ago. Civil War reenactment in Marin County.
Always wanted to attend one of those.
Not really my thing, but you know what a history buff my dad is.
Right. And the, rifles in the photo, are they real?
Sure. We use those ones right there.
So you know your way around antique weapons, then?
Douglas glances at the others.
Look, I've already told you. I may have pulled the trigger, and God knows I have to live with that for the rest of my life. But I didn't load the gun, and I have no idea who did.
No one is saying you did.
Aren't they?
Maggie takes out her phone and checks it.
Excuse me, I have to take this.
Maggie steps away.
Mrs. Price.
I just got off the phone with the security company. Now, according to their records, someone turned off the house alarm at 2:47 a.m. David's office was entered 2 minutes after that, and then 16 minutes later, someone reactivated the house alarm at 3:05 a.m.
So someone snuck into the house and David's office in the middle of the night?
Yeah, looks like it. You know what this means?
We're looking at murder.
Maggie returns to the weapons room.
My captain just spoke with the security company. Somebody entered the house, turning off both this room's alarm and the house alarm shortly before 3 a.m., just before the party, and then left shortly thereafter. Do either one of you know anything about that?
No.
Of course not.
Your father said only the immediate family knows the code to this room.
We all have keys. We grew up here. Maybe it was my dad entering the code.
That doesn't make sense to me. Why would your dad come home and then leave again in the middle of the night?
Exactly. He didn't. The house alarm was turned off at 8 o'clock in the morning without anyone opening the front door again. That tells me that your father was probably still asleep upstairs while the intruder came into the home. Then he came down in the morning and turned the alarm off. I can look for signs of forced entry, but if our intruder knows both of the alarm codes, I don't think I'm gonna find anything. I need to know where everyone was at 3 a.m. Friday morning. Starting with you.
Douglas's brow furrows.
Should I be calling my attorney?
If you'd like, but this is just a formality.
Look, nobody's pointing fingers, Douglas. We just need to know where you and Angela and everyone else at the party were for alibis.
I was at home sleeping.
Alone?
Yes.
Can anyone confirm this?
You could talk to my cat, but otherwise, no.
Angela, what about you?
I love Ken, okay? But my mom died. It was all that I had.
I understand.
At 3 a.m., I was at home in bed with my husband sleeping, obviously. You can ask him.
Okay, we need to talk to Felicity.
She's with Colin.
Angela turns sharply.
What?
They went riding. She said she needs to get out of the house.
Colin didn't tell me that Felicity was going there.
Well.
Maggie and Henry exchange glances.
She stables a horse at our place. Colin and I have a ranch in Sonoma. I would take you there, but I'm not comfortable leaving my father right now.
That's all right. If you could just get us the address, we'll find them.
Yeah.
Now, Maggie's car drives along a tree-lined path, passing stone walls. The car pulls up to a large country house surrounded by trees and parks. Maggie and Henry walk up the patio stairs to the front door. Henry turns. He takes a few steps and looks out over the grounds. Maggie joins him. They notice a stable with a large field of dirt in front and several horses grazing in front.
Nice little place.
Yeah. It must be around here somewhere. Let's look around.
They step down off the patio and approach a wooden gate.
It's beautiful.
It is.
Oh, I miss riding. Those horses remind me of when I rode with the SFPD Mounted Division.
You rode with the Mounted Division? I didn't know that.
There are lots of things you don't know about me.
Maggie turns and walks to the stable barn. She opens the door and enters. Inside, they pass a handwritten sign advertising pony rides with an arrow. Felicity is petting a horse in a pen as they approach.
Felicity.
Henry, Detective Price, this is a surprise. What are you doing here? Just looking for you and Colin.
I was just out riding with him. I came back early. Is something wrong?
No, we just had a few more questions.
Maggie turns to the horse.
She's a beauty. A Rocky Mountain, huh?
You know your horses.
What's her name?
This is Lightning. You want to pet her?
No, I'm good. Thank you. Just...
Okay. I know it must look strange to see me out here riding the day after... After last night. Riding is my escape, and I feel like if I don't keep moving or keep myself occupied, I'm gonna fall apart.
Felicity removes the saddle.
I can't believe Ken is gone. It doesn't seem real. I know what you're thinking. I was a little hard on everyone at the party, but we're still family.
How long do you think Colin will be?
Maybe he stopped at the pond.
How far is the pond?
It's not far. It's just up the trail. Do you ride?
Mm-hmm.
Could saddle up a couple of horses and we could go find him.
Yeah, I think that would...
Henry flinches.
All good.
Maybe we should just walk.
Sure.
Outside, they stroll along a path.
So help me understand the disagreement over the family business. Ken was in charge of the digital content side, is that right?
Yes. And I have to admit, he'd made great strides. But as the CFO, I wasn't convinced he could turn things around quickly enough. Neither was Doug.
What did your dad think?
He was conflicted. He could see the numbers. Our company has lost hundreds of millions in value, and he knew we were in trouble.
But I think selling his life's work was a little too much for him to accept. Ken loved the business as much as my dad did, and my father trusted him. It's not that he didn't trust Doug or I, it's just...
Ken gave him a reason to believe it wasn't over.
Yes. So then what happens now? I think the loss of Ken will be too much for my dad. He'll hand the reins over to Douglas, knowing we'll ultimately sell the business. Colin?
Colin lays in the path motionless. A horse grazes nearby. They dash over.
Okay, easy, easy. Colin. Careful. You okay?
Colin, what happened?
I don't know. I was galloping, and all of a sudden my saddle came loose, and I went flying.
Maggie dashes over to the saddle.
Let me see.
She examines it.
The girth strap's been cut.
What?
You're lucky. You could have been killed.
You might want to get that looked at.
Henry tends to Colin.
I spoke with the employee who saddled your horse. He says he didn't notice anything wrong with the saddle and doesn't know how this happened.
You believe him?
Yeah, and the cut was hidden. I think it's very possible for someone to have missed it.
Well, I know everyone on this ranch. No one here is responsible for this.
Do you know who, then?
No idea.
Here, let me take a look at that.
Colin has a head laceration.
Yeah, I think you're maybe going to need some stitches.
And you should probably get those ribs looked at. Let me take you to the hospital.
I can drive myself.
Suit yourself. Before we take off, I need to know where you both were at 3 a.m. on Friday.
I was at home, in bed with my wife.
I was at home, alone.
Now, Henry and Maggie walk together, passing a stand of baskets of farm foods.
So, is it just me or...
Or something going on between those two?
Uh-huh.
Maggie checks her phone.
Hey, Nolan. I'm with Henry. What's up?
Hi, guys. I just emailed you the autopsy report, and as I suspected, I found hemorrhaging in the brain signifying hydrostatic shock, which was caused by a large bore bullet entering the victim's heart at close range. The musket ball was a .45 caliber.
Thanks. Anything else?
Just one more thing. Something odd. I found trace amounts of oatmeal in the entry wound.
Of what?
Yeah, I didn't know what it was at first, but it's oatmeal. And cooked, if you're wondering.
What do you make of that?
I don't know. It's a first for me.
All right, thanks, Nolan. I'll let you know if I have any follow-up questions.
Maggie hangs up. They pause at the car.
So, where to now?
Time for a history lesson.
In an antique shop.
Okay, well, first off with these, you don't use a traditional blank like with a modern gun. To create the puff of smoke, you first load gunpowder down the barrel, and then you create an airtight seal around it.
And how do you do that?
Some people like to use bits of styrofoam egg carton. Push down the barrel with a ramrod. You could also use cotton or wool.
What about oatmeal?
You've done your homework. I've heard oatmeal works equally as well. Now, once you've created that seal, you have a very small explosion without a projectile. Looks and sounds very realistic.
And if you did accidentally load, oh, I don't know, let's say a blank of oatmeal on top of a loaded musket ball, would the gun still fire correctly?
Well, you bet it would. A little plug of oatmeal will not stop the bullet.
Maggie and Henry exchange glances. Later, Henry and Maggie enter the police station.
You know, we should go riding sometime.
You sure? You seemed a little jumpy around the horses.
Please, I was not jumpy.
Oh, okay.
It just startled me, is all.
By making a noise.
Well, a loud noise.
Jim sits with a crowd of officers.
So, then I had to make a decision. Do I cuff the guy, or do I at least let him get dressed?
So what did you do?
What do you think? I let him get dressed.
Hey, guys.
Oh, hey. There he is.
Dad, what are you doing here?
Dad?
We finished at the food festival a little earlier than expected.
Yeah, and I wanted to see where you volunteer.
Consult.
Wait, your dad's in town?
I can't believe you didn't tell us your dad was a cop.
And he's a cop.
But Maggie, I was gonna, yeah. I was gonna...
You tell. Must be Maggie. Jim Ross.
How do you do? Nice to meet you. Henry's told me...
Next to nothing about me?
Something like that.
Maggie,
This is the Jim Ross from the 39th Precinct.
Not Officer Ross who stopped a bank robbery in progress using only
a pen. Yep, the one and only. Has he told you the one about delivering the triplets on the Bay Bridge yet? That's a real crowd pleaser as well.
The officer's tense, looking at Henry. Jim smiles weakly.
Look, I'm sorry I barged in. I should let you people get back to work, huh?
It was so good. Nice meeting you. Great for stopping by. Thanks.
Jim hugs Lucy. Then she turns to Henry.
Your dad was wondering about dinner. He offered to cook tonight.
I will cook.
Got it. It was nice seeing you all.
It's good to see you again, Lucy. Stop by anytime.
I'd be happy to.
All right.
Lucy and Monroe smile at each other as she leaves.
It's great meeting you, Maggie. Henry, I will see you later.
Yeah.
Jim glances at Maggie, then walks off. Henry turns to Maggie.
Well, I guess we should get you guys up to speed.
Look, Maggie, I was...
We're working here, Henry.
Felicity sits in an office on the phone.
I don't want to do this anymore. I just want out.
It's too late for that.
Felicity, please.
Stephen, if you think you're in trouble now, I will make sure it only gets worse for you. I mean it. Just get me what I need.
Felicity scowls and hangs up. Maggie and Henry stand in front of the evidence board.
So, we just spent some time with an antique weapons dealer over in Potrero. He walked us through how a flintlock works, and after speaking with him, we now know that it's possible for the weapon to have been loaded before David loaded the blank and still fire.
Yeah, the barrels on these pistols are long and narrow and hard to see down, so David definitely wouldn't have noticed, which means that our suspicions
were correct in that whoever entered David's office at 3 a.m. loaded the pistol knowing he probably wouldn't be discovered,
but it would still
fire during the reenactment.
So, we know the how and the when, we just don't know who.
Henry has a theory.
Oh, can I go now?
Be my guest.
Okay. Yeah, I've been wondering about Felicity. We surprised her at Collins Ranch, but she is definitely holding something back.
Takes one to know one. While we were there, somebody cut through Collins' saddle before his morning ride, and he fell.
Do you think that's related to the case?
We don't know if it is or not. What we do know is Felicity was acting nervous, and we definitely noticed some tension between she and Colin. She also mentioned that Angela is jealous of their relationship.
Do you think they're having an affair?
Could be.
So maybe Angela cut the saddle to send him a message?
Well, you've been doing this long enough to know that the quiet ones may always surprise you.
So how much do we know about Colin?
Well, he's an entrepreneur. He's obviously done very well for himself. I do know that he started in Silicon Valley, made some money with a tech startup, and then used those funds to start his health food company, Watershed.
I'm going to look into him further tonight, and Felicity. Why don't you guys keep running down alibis? Sorry, I've got to get some food. I haven't eaten since breakfast.
You could grab an early dinner at my house.
That's all right.
No, just a quick bite.
No, thanks.
Maggie walks out.
Is it me or is it getting chilly in here?
Definitely sense some tension in there.
Yeah, very funny. Keep it. I love that. Great routine.
Yeah.
Really very funny.
Oh, someone's in the doghouse. Hate to be Henry today.
Henry follows Maggie into the hallway.
Okay, what's going on?
Nothing. I'm just going to get a bite to eat.
Obviously, you're angry at me.
Why would I be angry?
That sounds like a trick question.
Look, you want your space. This is me giving you your space.
Who said anything about space?
Why else wouldn't you bother telling me that your dad's in town?
What, that? I just...
What, forgot? You haven't spoken to this man in years. You don't think I might be interested in the fact that he's here?
Of course I knew you'd be interested. That's why I didn't tell you. Wait. That didn't sound right.
Nice, Henry. Forget it. Never mind.
No, I know that one. Never mind never means never mind.
I'm going home.
Look, Maggie, my dad and I, we can be oil and water, and I didn't want you to feel uncomfortable, but the truth of the matter is that I want you to meet him. I really do. Look, come to my house. Get to know my dad. I want you to.
Do you?
Yes. Because somehow I've ended up in the doghouse and I don't know any way out except to invite you over and just, you know, dazzle you with my cooking. Please.
You're good at that. The whole dazzling thing.
Mm-hmm. Takes one to know one. So you'll come.
Maggie grins. Now, at his home kitchen, Henry plates a meal.
It smells so delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Maggie pours wine.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Can I offer you a glass of wine?
Water will be fine, thank you. I don't drink.
That's new.
Actually, it's been 2 years now.
Henry nods, then turns to his food.
So, Jim, do you like to cook?
I love to cook. You know, I like to think that Henry picked up a thing or two from the old man.
That's funny, Dad. I don't remember you teaching me anything in the kitchen.
Jim smiles anxiously.
So, Maggie, how long have you been a detective?
Nearly 10 years.
10 years?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be a detective, too, you know. Well, that was always the plan, anyway. After Henry's mother passed away, I was raising him on my own on a cop's salary. There was no way I could, you know, spend the time and money to get the training and take those tests. So I stayed a beat cop, worked overtime every chance I got. It was hard to be around as much as I would have liked.
And yet, there always seemed to be enough time and money for you to go out to the bar with your buddies after work, right?
When a guy can't go out with his buddies on a Saturday night?
No, that would have been fine. It's the other 6 nights of the week where it might have been nice to have you around the house.
6 nights? Come on. Wasn't that bad. All right. You know, maybe I needed to be around people after your mother was gone.
Yeah. So did I. Dinner's almost ready. Who's hungry?
Jim shakes his head. Evening. Clouds pass over the Weston house. Angela approaches David in the living room. He reads on a couch.
Oh. This hot tea.
Thank you, my dear.
You're welcome.
She hands the tea to David, who sips. Angela starts to walk off, then turns back.
Are you sure you want me to go? I could spend the night in my old room.
No. I'll be fine. You go on home and get some rest.
Okay. I'm just gonna do some tidying up in the kitchen and then I'll head out.
All right. Thanks, Angela. Good night.
Night, Dad.
Angela turns with a wistful look and walks off. David opens his book. Angela pauses. She turns back and stares for a moment. Then, she turns and walks off. David winces as he turns a page.
Ooh. Ow!
He clutches his chest and removes his glasses. He stands, then collapses to the floor. He lays motionless in the sitting room. Daytime. Angela enters the rotunda.
Douglas and Felicity are upstairs keeping Dad comfortable right now. The paramedic said it wasn't a heart attack. It's just a little angina.
Okay.
I went back in to make sure that he took his heart medication and I found him on the floor. I'm so sorry that I called you guys. I just overreacted.
No. We understand.
It's just with Ken being shot and then Colin's saddle being cut and that this. I just feel like I'm going a little crazy.
Angela, is there anything you want to tell us?
It's fine, honestly. I'm just on edge.
Henry and Maggie walk outside.
Maggie, wait a second. I know how we can confirm at least one alibi.
How's that?
This is Doug's Tesla. I've read that Tesla will cooperate with the police investigation by giving detailed reports about a car's location history. If Doug was at home at 3 a.m. like he said he was, his car should have been too.
I knew there was a reason I keep you around.
Uh-huh. Hey, listen. Do you mind if we take a little detour before going home? I promise you it'll be worth it.
It better be.
A marina.
I have tried every gelato place in the city.
Of course you have.
And this guy makes the best by far. White chocolate banana fig for me, and for you...
I have to guess. Strawberry.
They each take a bite.
With a little basil?
Oh, she's learning.
And maybe a little touch of turmeric?
You should probably quit while you're ahead. Just stop right there.
Fair enough.
I've been meaning to tell you something. For the last couple of months, I've been seeing this woman.
Okay.
She's smart and funny and caring and extremely beautiful.
Wow, she sounds amazing.
Yeah, she's okay. A little bossy. Gotta tell you. Anyway, I somehow made the mistake and made her think that I wasn't sharing things about myself because I didn't care about her. Which couldn't be further from the truth.
Well, I think that if she's as smart as you say she is, that she probably understands that now.
Good. You know, my mom threw the best birthday parties.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. She always did it up big. I remember one year, I couldn't decide on what cake flavor I wanted. So she brought home 4 different birthday cakes.
Wow.
Yeah.
She sounds wonderful.
Yeah, she was. I turned 13 a couple of months after she died. And I asked my dad not to do anything special. And laying low on my birthday became something of a habit, I guess.
I get it. You know, my dad and I were close, but I still regret the things that I never had a chance to say before he died. Your dad's reaching out. Don't leave anything unresolved.
Henry ponders. Elsewhere, Henry in his kitchen with a plate of bruschetta. He reads the San Francisco Courier headline, "Investigation Continues in Shooting Death of Ken Weston, President of David Weston Publishing Firm." Jim stands on the porch.
Hi.
Hi. I was going to call you. I'm sorry about yesterday. I never should have gotten into
it. It's all right. I get it.
Do you want to come in?
Actually, if you're not busy, I'd like to show you something.
At the ranch, Angela brings Maggie a nice tea.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for speaking with me again.
Of course. I'm happy to help with whatever you need.
I wanted to ask you about Felicity. She was jumpy yesterday when I saw her at the stables. Do you have any idea why?
No.
Is she having an affair with your husband?
I don't know.
But you suspect. Angela, the reason I'm asking is because I'm wondering if you're the one who cut Colin's saddle.
No, of course not. We're not in a great place. Colin's so wrapped up in work, it's all he cares about.
I see. That can happen.
We used to have so much fun together. Skiing and boating and traveling. And then Colin sold our Aspen home and our sailboat without even telling me. And when I asked him why, he just accused me of being spoiled. Couldn't understand that it wasn't about the possessions, it was about spending time together.
Angela glances around sadly. Maggie watches her. Elsewhere, Jim and Henry approach a storefront on the sidewalk downtown. They peek through the door window. Inside is a clutter of ladders and paint cans.
You recognize the place?
Yeah.
This is the diner we used to come to with Mom.
Of course, this was her favorite place. She'd always order the blueberry pancakes, right?
That's right. The guys from the station used to come here, too.
Then the recession hit.
Neighborhood went under. I've been talking to the owner of this building. It's offering an attractive lease.
You want to start a business?
I want to open something like that old diner. Now, the equipment is still in place, and I know the guys from the station would come back here. I think this could be a golden opportunity.
Right. So you need what? Money?
No. No, don't need any money. Your Aunt Susan died. She left me her house down in San Diego. Spent the last 2 years fixing it up and recently sold it. Now, I always wanted to do something special with the money. And I thought that, you know, moving back here and starting over, that'd give us a chance to start over as well.
Listen, Dad.
No, hear me out, will you? I know I wasn't the best father to you. You have every right to be angry. I wish I could change things, Henry. But I want you to know that I have followed your career from day one. All of it. And I am so proud of you. I mean it.
Thank you.
So, listen, I don't know if you'd be interested in this idea, but I was kind of thinking that maybe we could partner together on this, on the diner.
What?
I need you to consult on everything, the menu, the decor, vendors.
Dad, how could we be partners? I mean, think about it. We can't even be in the same room without driving each other crazy. How could...
Well, maybe it's time we learned how.
Dad, listen, I really appreciate the gesture. I mean, I really do, but I don't think this would work. I'm sorry.
Jim nods and turns sadly to the door.
I understand. It's just an idea I had.
Jim puts his hands in his pockets. At the police station, Maggie stands alone sipping coffee, the evidence board behind her. She turns and looks at the headshots of the Weston family. Then, she places the mug down and picks up a document from her desk. She walks over to the board and places a photo of Colin and Felicity, smiling together. Below the photo is a picture of Angela, staring off absently.
He sold it without even telling me.
Maggie ponders, staring at the board. In her office, Felicity types on her computer. She glances forward, staring at the computer screen. She flinches and looks up. Now, she passes through her kitchen and into a hallway. She notices the front door is swinging back and forth. She settles the door handle and steps outside.
Hello?
She glances around for a moment and returns inside. She shuts the door and locks it. With a panicked look, she turns and walks into a garage. Inside, a car is parked. She looks around then backs away. She returns to her office. From outside the window behind a tree, we watch her lean back in her chair. She flinches and answers the phone.
Hello?
I just sent it.
Let me check. Perfect.
Felicity, you realize you're hurting people.
You should have thought that a long time ago.
Abby sits on her front porch on her phone.
Mom, come on, we're gonna be late.
Okay, I'm coming. You're the only child I know who wants to get to school early. Who's that?
No one.
Okay.
They enter Maggie's car. Abby continues texting.
Am I too nosy?
What? Maybe a little. But I'm pretty sure that's your job, isn't it?
I don't know. You didn't exactly come with a manual. I'm just saying, you know, if you need more space, I could do that to a degree.
A small degree.
A tiny degree.
It's nice to know that you're always looking out for me.
Thank you.
I wouldn't want to be smothered by anybody else.
Thank you. Okay, so are you going to make me drag it out of you?
His name is Trevor.
Oh, good name.
I know. He just moved here, so I'm just getting to know him, but he's really smart and funny. He loves old movies, and he's on the basketball team.
Oh, boy. A smart and funny jock who loves old movies? He sounds like trouble.
You'd like him.
Invite him over.
I will. But only if you promise you won't grill him.
Who, me?
Oh, I won't grill him. I'm running a background check on him.
Well, you wouldn't be you if he didn't.
Maggie answers her cell.
Hey, Captain, what's up?
Just received the tracking information on Douglas's Tesla.
You are not going to believe where he was at 3 a.m. the night before the murder.
Felicity stands in her kitchen. She carries a wine glass to the fridge and opens it. She removes an item and closes the fridge, revealing Douglas, carrying coffee cups. Felicity drops the wine glass.
Sorry. Your side door was unlocked. I should have knocked.
Felicity sighs and bends to clean up the broken glass.
Is everything okay with you? You've been acting strange for weeks.
Have I?
Yes, actually, you have. You want to tell me what's going on?
Nothing's going on.
They both stand.
If you know something about Ken's murder, you need to tell me.
Felicity's hand bleeds.
Ow. Careful.
What a strange thing to say. Of course, I don't know anything.
Okay. You want a Band-Aid for that?
I'm fine. It's nothing.
I'll see you later.
Thanks for the coffee.
Douglas nods and grins, then walks off. Felicity stares after him, a worried look on her face. Maggie and Henry pull up to a house in Ad Park.
3145.
Beth waters her grass.
Okay, so Doug's Tesla was parked right here at 3 a.m. Obviously, he didn't want to be seen sneaking into his dad's house just down the street. We already know he has a key and knows both alarm codes.
Or he wasn't going to David's house at all. He said 3145, right?
Yeah.
Let's see if she has any theories.
Henry gets out, staring at Beth.
Morning.
Morning.
I'm Detective Ross. This is Detective Price. We're looking into Ken Weston's death.
How can I help?
Detective.
Now, Henry and Maggie stand in Beth's backyard, which overlooks the bay. Beth approaches with glasses of water.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thanks. I still can't believe it. Ken was such a lovely person. I met him a few times at David's holiday parties. I can't imagine what David must be going through.
The whole family is pretty shaken up.
Especially Douglas.
He must blame himself, you know, even though it was an accident.
Only it wasn't. It was premeditated. Somebody broke into David's home and office at 3 o'clock in the morning the night before the party. They loaded the pistol with a real bullet. As you can imagine, 3 a.m. alibis are not easy to come by. But what we do know is that Doug's car was parked in front of your house at the same time that the perpetrator was breaking into David's office. Did you happen to see or hear anything?
No, I didn't.
Beth. You're the woman who was arguing with Doug on the patio at the party, aren't you?
Are you two having an affair?
If someone were to come forward with an alibi, would it be public knowledge?
We could be discreet.
Beth nods and ponders. Elsewhere, Felicity backs her car out of her garage. As the car pulls away, it reveals a puddle of liquid on the floor of the garage. Henry and Maggie walk away from Beth's house.
Good instincts, Detective Ross.
Lucky guess.
Maggie answers her phone.
Detective Price.
Maggie, it's Felicity Weston. I need to speak with you. It's urgent.
Hi, Felicity. Where are you?
I just left my house. I can be at the precinct in 20 minutes.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I can meet you then. Okay, bye.
Felicity drives her car along a street. She approaches a stoplight, turning yellow. She places her foot on the brake. Her eyes widen as she continues pumping the brake. She drives into the intersection. Another car hits hers. At the police station, Henry approaches Maggie and the others carrying a Twinkie.
So we just lost our number one suspect.
Are you kidding me?
Stupid vending machine. I was trying to get a granola bar.
Douglas is having an affair with the neighbor. She claims that she was with him all night long.
And you believe her?
She could be covering for him.
Well, it's a soft alibi, but she was reluctant to give us the information, so I'm inclined to believe her.
She grabs the Twinkie.
You wouldn't.
I paid Angela a little visit yesterday. She told me that Colin sold their Aspen home and their boat without telling her.
Champagne problems.
But she's lying, because I decided to do a little research, and I looked up the cabin and the yacht, and they are both in Angela's name, and they are both repossessed by the bank. In fact, I have her signature on the paperwork right there.
So, Mr. Moneybags wasn't doing as well as we thought.
And if you're lying about your finances, what else are you lying about?
Exactly. So good.
And here I thought you changed.
Another thing you don't know about me. Sometimes I eat these things when you're not around. Detective Price.
Maggie stiffens and turns to the others.
What hospital?
Now, Maggie stands outside Felicity's hospital room. She lays in bed, her neck in a brace. Henry approaches.
Doctor just spoke with a family in the waiting room. They've placed Felicity in a medically induced coma to try to reduce the swelling in her brain. Next 24 hours are critical. What are you doing?
David gave me Felicity's cell phone, so I've been looking through her emails and recent calls. I need to ask David about a couple of these names, like this one here, Steve Saunders. Do you know who that is?
No idea.
What about this guy, John Burgess?
Actually, yes, I do know that name. I just read an article about him. He's the, he's the CEO of a company that owns a bunch of magazines. They're not as big as David's company, but they have apparently been on a bit of a buying spree lately.
Maggie nods, pondering.
Oh, come on. You're not even a little impressed? I pulled that out of thin air.
Maggie answers her phone.
Go, Monroe.
I think I found something.
What is it?
It looks like someone punctured the brake lines of Felicity's car.
Are you sure?
Well, I'm no mechanic, but I know a punctured brake line when I see one.
Is CSI there yet?
No, not yet. But I'll send the report over once they sweat for prints.
I want you to assign an officer to guard Felicity's room. I want her watched
24/7 until we know whoever did this.
Okay, I'm on it.
Henry and Maggie at the police station.
I got these off of Felicity's phone. The CFO of Collins' company, Steve Saunders, emailed them to her. They're copies of Watershed's financial statements. One set is real, the other is a fake.
There's a $50 million difference here.
Colin gave every appearance of being successful, while secretly being leveraged to the hilt.
Okay, but what does this have to do with Ken?
Okay, stick with me on this, all right? What if Colin and Angela killed Ken, knowing that with him gone, David would likely give in to Douglas and Felicity's wish to sell the publishing business, right? It's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. If David's children inherit everything, Angela gets a tidy sum to bail Colin out.
No, I don't know, Maggie. I've known Angela for years. She just doesn't seem the type to me.
An officer enters.
Just received the credit card activity you asked for. Two red flags right off the bat. A reservation for a private jet and a hotel reservation in the Cayman Islands, both made on Angela Weston's credit card yesterday.
Interesting time to be taking a vacation.
All right, but think about it, okay? David owns 100% of his company. Angela's not going to inherit anything if the company is sold.
Maggie turns to the evidence board.
Unless...
She turns to Henry, who nods, staring at her.
Unless her father were to die.
Maggie turns back to the board, glancing at the photo of David. Elsewhere, a tall corporate building. Henry and Maggie enter an office and approach a reception desk. Maggie holds her badge.
We'd like to see Colin Miller.
I'm sorry, Mr. Miller's working from home today. Is there something I can help you with?
Maggie takes out a paper.
This is a warrant to search the premises. I'd like to speak with Steve Saunders.
Right this way.
The receptionist leads them to a break room where a man sits writing on a pad.
Mr. Saunders?
Detective Price, SFPD. I believe you know Felicity Weston.
Steve stands. Then, they sit on couches in a conference room.
Company bled money from day one. But instead of listening to me, or anyone else, Colin refused to step back and address his costs.
So when did you start keeping a second set of books?
3 years ago. Colin made me keep a second ledger, a fake that we would show to the banks. Colin would be borrowing money from one bank to pay another. He thought he could buy his way out of the hole he had dug. By the time that I realized he wouldn't be able to, I tried to leave. I did. But she threatened to pin everything on me.
She?
Angela. She found out about everything. She said she would go straight to the police and tell them it was all my idea.
Why didn't Angela go to her dad for help?
Because what we were doing, it was illegal.
So is that when you reached out to Felicity?
No, she came to me. We know each other. She had heard a rumor that Watershed was holding an unusually high level of debt. Felicity said she needed proof of what Colin was doing for something else he was involved in, so I gave her whatever she wanted. I just wanted out.
Henry glances at Maggie, who stares. Now, Steve watches from the door of an office, his hand covering his mouth, as Henry rummages through a filing cabinet, and Maggie opens a small box sitting on the desk. Maggie places the box back in a drawer as Henry continues reading papers. Inside a desk drawer, Maggie finds a pill bottle.
Hey, look at this. The label.
That's weird.
Henry turns to Steve.
Does Colin take any medication?
Not that I know of.
Do you recognize what they are?
No, how about you?
No idea.
Oh, there's an easy way to find out.
Maggie and Henry approach the door.
This isn't over, but you're doing the right thing by cooperating.
They walk out. Then, they stand at a pharmacy counter.
These are trioxapan. It's a heart medication.
Are you sure?
Of course. You see that tiny imprint? That's the pill identifier telling you the drug and manufacturer. It treats conditions like high blood pressure, angina, hypertension, some arrhythmias.
Okay, so if someone who's supposed to be on that medication stopped taking it, would that be dangerous?
Every situation is different, but in some cases, yeah, could be fatal.
Maggie pulls out photos of Angela and Colin.
Okay, just one more thing. Do you happen to recognize either of these two people?
She was just in last week, picked up her father's trioxapan.
Henry turns and reaches into his pocket. Elsewhere, David in his home.
Hello?
David, it's Henry. Are you still at the hospital?
No, there's been no change with Felicity, so I decided to come home and get some rest. Is everything all right?
Can you take out one of your heart pills?
It should be a red pill with the letter T stamped on one side.
Okay, hang on a second.
David puts on his glasses.
Yeah.
David examines a pill. He places the pills down and picks up his phone.
That's odd. I mean, the pills look the same, but there's no mark on them. Henry, what's going on?
Okay, David, I need you to go see your doctor right away and tell him you may not have been taking the right medication for some time. I'll explain more when I see you, but will you do that for me right now?
Well, yes, of course.
Okay, I'll call you later.
Thank you.
David hangs up, furrowing his brow. Then, on the sidewalk.
So Colin and Angela are trying to kill her stepfather by swapping out his medication. But then why keep the trioxin?
Because after David had a fatal heart attack, they'd have to switch the pills back to avoid any suspicion, right? It would just look like a regular heart attack. Let's go find him.
Now, Henry and Maggie approach the front door of the country house. Maggie's gun is drawn. Angela opens the door, her hands up.
What is going on?
We know everything, Angela.
Colin's secretary just called and said that you had been into the office. And then he went crazy. I've never seen him like this.
Where is he now?
He went into the stables. I don't know why.
You stay with her. Don't let her out of your sight.
What is happening, Henry?
Inside the stable, Colin is on the ground pulling up floorboards. He reaches below and pulls up a bag. He looks inside. The bag is full of stacks of $100 bills. Maggie approaches the stable, her gun drawn. Colin dials his cell phone.
Yeah, I want the jet fueled and ready to go in 40 minutes. I'm on my way.
Maggie approaches the door of the stable and opens it. She enters, her gun still drawn. Colin flinches and turns, his eyes wide. Maggie continues creeping inside the stables, her gun extended in front of her. On the porch, Angela faces Henry.
Henry, you have to believe me. I admit I committed fraud, but killing Ken? I loved Ken. I would never do anything to hurt him, ever. You've known me for years. You really think that I am capable of something like that?
We have enough proof to know that you either did it together or Colin acted alone.
Angela turns. Maggie turns a corner in the stable, her gun still drawn. She approaches a barn door and opens it. She points her gun inside, but the room is dark and empty. On the porch, Angela sits, sobbing.
Ken was my big brother. He was the best, most decent person I ever knew.
Henry sits in the chair beside her.
We have proof that Colin's been swapping out your father's medication for some time. He's the one that killed Ken. And he needed your father gone to get at your inheritance. He was going to make it look like a heart attack.
Is my father okay?
He's fine. It's okay. Listen to me, Angela. Can I trust you that you're not going to run?
Yes, of course. I have nowhere to go.
Henry looks at her. Maggie continues creeping inside the stable. She notices the pulled-up floorboards beside a crowbar. Her hair begins to blow in the wind. She looks around. She takes a few steps, glancing around.
Colin?
Several bales of hay fall down upon her, and she falls to the ground. Colin looks down from the loft as Maggie lay motionless. Colin dashes down from the loft carrying the bag. He bends down and picks up the gun beside Maggie's motionless body. He walks out of the stable carrying the bag. He dashes up toward the house. Maggie stirs and sits up. She groans and pushes a bale of hay off of her. She sits up, scowling. She reaches into her shoe and removes a second gun. She dashes outside. Colin carries the bag to his car. He freezes, noticing one of the tires deflating.
You gotta be kidding me.
Henry approaches with a pitchfork.
Sorry about the tires. Hope you got AAA.
That's funny. The guy who brought a pitchfork to a gunfight. Now toss it. Toss it!
Colin aims the gun at Henry, who drops the pitchfork and puts his hands up.
Where's Maggie?
Maggie approaches.
She's detained. Now give me your car keys.
I don't have the keys. It's Maggie's car. She doesn't let me drive.
It's over, Colin. Drop your weapon. Put your hands behind your head. I said drop the weapon.
I'm warning you, detective. I will shoot.
Even if you pull that trigger, I'm going to get one shot off. And I promise you, I am deadly accurate. Your call.
Colin aims the gun at Henry.
Whoa, 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 whoa! I believe you would take a bullet, Maggie. But would you let Henry take one?
Shoot him.
What?
I'm not kidding, detective.
I said shoot him. But just so you know, if you pull that trigger, I will shoot you.
Colin turns and aims at Henry. Colin lowers the gun, glancing at it. Maggie fires at him, hitting him in the shoulder. She dashes over and leans him against the car.
Barely grazed your shoulder, Colin. Consider yourself lucky.
You let him shoot me.
He didn't shoot you.
Yeah, but he tried and you let him.
Henry, like every cop, I keep the chamber empty. I could tell by the chamber indicator that he hadn't loaded a round.
Oh.
Colin Miller, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say or do can and will be used against you in a court of law.
Later, Colin in an interrogation room, Maggie and Henry outside with the chief.
Once we told Colin that forensics had swept his place and found gunpowder on the cuff of one of his jackets, powder that matched the residue on the murder weapon, he caved. He confessed everything. He used Angela's key to get into the mansion and, of course, knew both alarm codes from watching her use them over the years.
Why didn't Felicity come to us right away?
Felicity didn't know what was going on right away. So a few months ago, she began hearing rumors that Colin's business was in trouble. Then she heard from John Burgess that Colin had secretly been floating the idea that David's whole company would soon be up for sale.
That didn't make any sense to her. She knew Ken would never sell the family business.
So when Ken's death started to look less and less like an accident, she confronted Colin at his ranch. She didn't have a smoking gun, but she spooked him.
Which is why he cut his own saddle, to throw us off. It wasn't until Saunders shared the two sets of books with her that Felicity felt she had enough to share with us.
Hmm. Interesting.
Good work, you two.
They walk into the hallway.
Henry, I think you missed your calling.
You hear that? She said I missed my calling.
I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, come on, you gotta admit, I'm pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe now I can get that badge.
Henry, you are not getting a badge.
Elsewhere, Henry and Maggie walk on the downtown sidewalk in casual clothes.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that, David. Give my best to Felicity, will you? Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
So Felicity's gonna be okay?
She's out of the coma, and it looks like she's gonna be just fine.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear that. Are you ready for your non-party?
Henry nods. She drags him into a restaurant.
All right.
Inside, guests gather and mingle, some holding wine glasses. Jim enters with a box. He pauses, glancing around. Henry turns to see him.
Excuse me.
Maggie watches as Henry walks over to Jim.
I'm glad you're here. I've been thinking more about your idea.
Okay.
I think you're right. I think opening up the diner again is a great opportunity, and you are the perfect person to do it. I'd be happy to help you with it.
Really?
Yeah. I was thinking of a name.
I'm calling it Molly's.
It's perfect.
She would have liked it.
Yeah. Come on.
Jim puts his arm around Henry, and they approach the others. Later, Henry and Maggie sit together at a table full of desserts and pastries. He strokes her arm.
Did I ever tell you about my first kiss?
I don't believe you have.
Oh. Well, Bon Jovi was playing on the stereo. I was wearing a white suit with a blue t-shirt because
you were Don Johnson on Miami Vice?
No. Because it was the sixth grade dance, and my crush, Sophie Wilkerson, had agreed to be my date.
Big moment.
Indeed.
And how was it?
Well, she had braces. But other than that, I gotta tell you, it's pretty good.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I see. Yeah.
Maggie leans in and kisses him.
Better than me.
Henry gazes at her.
I'm gonna need more evidence.
They lean in and kiss again. They continue kissing. Around them, the other guests at the party continue mingling.